Hi, Simon here. My new book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, is now available for pre-order as an ebook and audiobook on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble. This book shares many incredible near-death experiences, each with verifiable proof that challenges everything we think we know about consciousness and the afterlife. In the book, individuals whose hearts had stopped and whose brains had flatlined saw things that were later verified. Things they should not have been able to see, because by all medical understanding, they were dead. These are real stories, backed by real evidence, that will make you question what lies beyond. If you're fascinated by near-death experiences and mysteries of life and death, pre-order your copy today. Again, that's Verified Near-Death Experiences, Proof of an Afterlife, available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Welcome to Our Paranormal Afterlife. This is Our Paranormal Afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 100 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Andy Myers about his book, Beyond the Veil, Exploring Reincarnation, Angels and the Supernatural. Andy is an acclaimed psychic who has been featured on many radio stations. He is a keynote speaker, podcaster, humorist, and paranormal researcher. Hi, Andy. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Simon. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Beyond the Veil, Exploring Reincarnation, Angels and the Supernatural. But before we talk about that, you had a near-death experience, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did. It was my origin story, if you will. It was the catalyst of everything I am and everything that I do professionally. It took place in the fall of 2006, which seems like a long time ago already, coming up on 20 years. At the time, you know, I was open-minded. I've always been open-minded to the paranormal and supernatural topics. You know, taking a mild interest, if you will, watching the occasional documentary, reading a few books. But at the time, I was a social worker. And so I was working in after school programs and mental health facilities. And it happened at a pretty unassuming time in my life. At the time, I was living in an apartment with a roommate on the second story. And I went to sleep just like any other night. And in the middle of the night, I had an experience that I can only classify as a near-death experience. I woke up and I felt my whole body in this kind of euphoric state of I was vibrating and trembling, and I felt, you know, quite literally unconditional love. And, you know, that feeling wasn't just unique, but what was also different was the absence of other emotions, such as anxiety and fear. I had no anxiety, no fear whatsoever. I felt quite heavenly, if you will. And at that moment, I heard a voice speak to me almost inside my head, if that makes sense. I didn't hear it with my ears. I heard it from within me, yet it was coming from somewhere else. And what the voice said to me or transferred to me was that if I wanted to be done with this human experience, then all I needed to do was allow my spirit to float out of my body and through the ceiling of my apartment into the universe. And appropriately enough, there was a hole missing from the ceiling of my bedroom. And through this hole, I could see the universe, you know, glowing stars and galaxy and nebula. You know, quite literally, it's the most beautiful thing that I've ever seen. And I felt this pulsating feeling of love, almost like a heartbeat. And the invitation was too amazing to pass up. So I felt myself begin to float out of my body. And as my spirit rose and rose higher towards the ceiling, the feeling of love grew in intensity. And the voice said to me, you know, if I wanted to be reunited with everyone that I've ever lost and have all the answers to my earthly questions answered, you know, just keep floating out into the universe. And just as I was on the threshold, just as I was on the cusp of crossing over, so to speak, I had a change of heart. And I said, for lack of a better terms, I said, although it was more like a transfer of thought, I spoke to this entity who I perceived was a higher power. And I said, I'm not ready. I can't leave this life. I have more work to do. I have something really big, something very important that I'm supposed to accomplish. And I have a lot of people to help. And at the time, I guess in my subconscious, I assumed that might have to do with social work, you know, helping people afflicted by mental health conditions and at-risk youth. In any case, my wish was granted, and I felt my spirit slam back into my body. The hole in my ceiling closed up, and I felt myself, waking up for real this time, waking up gasping for air. And I do believe in hindsight that what had happened was that I had stopped breathing in the middle of the night. I've known for my whole adulthood that I do have a case of sleep apnea. Now, most of the time, I think it's a mild or moderate case, which is not life-threatening. But in some cases, you know, the sleep apnea can be more severe. So I think I had stopped breathing in the middle of the night, which kind of prompted this whole near-death experience. And when I woke up, yeah, I was tingling. I was emotional. I was, searching for answers as to what happened to me. I called in sick to work the next day because I needed time to mentally process it. And yeah, it was surreal. And what followed changed my entire life trajectory, 100%. In the weeks and months that followed, I felt myself sensing more, feeling more, having more intuitive moments. For example, I'd be at the, you know, at the gym exercising, or I'd be at the grocery store shopping or pumping gas, and I would see strangers. And as I would look at random people, I would sense and feel and hear information in my head about who they were and what they were going through. Now, this sounds interesting, but with my background in mental health, I assumed these were hallucinations. I assumed I was, on the verge of a mental breakdown, but everything else in my life was going along as normal. Thankfully, and I count my lucky stars for this every day, that thankfully I come from a very open-minded family. So as I shared, some of this experience with friends and family, they encouraged me to be more curious, to approach some of these strangers, to ask them if what I was sensing and feeling was actually true. And to my relief, they validated much of the information. And, from that point on, it was just a matter of, a year or so. And I was invited onto a live radio show in my hometown of Omaha, Nebraska, a very popular radio station that's listened to by major cities. And I was kind of thrown into the deep end of the paranormal pool. And I started taking questions from callers and relaying messages from their deceased loved ones and telling them about their past lifetimes. And that's kind of how I got my start. That's my origin story. And, nearly 20 years later now, being a psychic and a spiritual lecturer and an author, it's became my full-time job. And it's been a wild ride, but it all began on that autumn night in 2006.
And before that, I suppose you didn't have any kind of psychic or mediumship talents at all?
Yeah, I would say, perhaps we all do on some level. I think we all are prone to these experiences where, maybe knowing what's going to happen before it happens, or, you think of a long lost friend and then they call out of the blue that same day, little things like that, but nothing that I would classify as, professional caliber psychic. Throughout my youth, I always felt a little different, a little odd, perhaps a little bit more emotionally in tune with other people's feelings. But beyond that, I had no working knowledge of the intricacies of the paranormal or the psychic realms. But after that near-death experience, I was curious, and I just could not get enough information about spirituality and meditation and the afterlife and, all these different terms and definitions for the various psychic abilities. And for a while it was lonely. It was a lonely journey because I felt, I had always felt different. Now I felt even more different. Like, you know, other people couldn't exactly understand what I was going through. But I felt heard and understood in the books that I was reading because they gave terms and definitions to things that I had been feeling my whole life. And so, you know, I kind of felt like an animal who had now been assigned my order, genus, and species. And that was truly eye-opening for me. And so, you know, as I began to educate myself and, you know, things unfolded, I just began to meet more and more amazing people. And, you know, a hobby of giving psychic readings turned into a part-time job and then a full-time job. And, you know, before long, I was, you know, making a full-time living doing it. And it's been a fun journey. It really has. It's been a really fun way to make a living. And one of my favorite parts is just meeting interesting people from all walks of life. You know, people who have stories about angels and ghosts and their own near-death experiences, stories about miracles and synchronicities. And, you know, and some stories people share with me defy all logical explanation. And those are some of my favorites. So, you know, over the years, I've collected a lot of these stories and I've incorporated some of them into my books. Of course, my most recent one, as you mentioned, is called Beyond the Veil, which is kind of a hodgepodge of various New Age subjects. But yeah, up until that near-death experience, I was very kind of limited in my understanding of the paranormal, but things took off very quickly from that point on.
So the book is laid out as lots and lots of questions about all sorts of things. Where did you get the questions from? Is this mostly things that people have asked you over time?
Yeah, so the book is a question and answer format, and the questions are exclusively from clients and people who have attended my lectures throughout the years. In fact, some of them are very recent, as recent as just a few months before the book was published. But I selected several dozens of questions ranging from ghosts to angels, past lifetimes, psychic abilities, signs and messages from heaven, and even near-death experiences. And I've addressed those within the book. So it's a pretty simple format, but I think it's a quick read. It's an easy read for those who perhaps are not avid readers or those who have a limited attention span, because each section, each question is kind of a standalone segment. So I always jokingly tell people, you can read the book out of order if you'd like. It really doesn't matter because the segments are not interconnected. But it's kind of a couple pages here, a couple pages there. So it's a perfect book if you have 5 or 10 minutes and you just want to, you know, pique your interest in these subjects.
Well, I wanted to ask about one of your experiences when you say that a pack of cigarettes saved your life.
Yeah, that's an odd one. That's an odd one because, you know, as we all know, smoking is dangerous. It's deadly. It comes with a whole host of health risks. But once upon a time, I think this may have predated my near-death experience. But, you know, I was in my early 20s and doing what a lot of 20-something-year-olds do. I was, you know, out at the bar with friends and having a good time and having drinks. And we ended up going to an after party in the wee hours of the morning at an apartment that I was unfamiliar with. It was actually a friend of a friend. So we kind of carpooled and we arrived there. And as people started to filter into the apartment, I didn't recognize a lot of the people. And as the night progressed, I started to become more and more uneasy. You know, I'm a pretty peaceful person. I try to abide by the law and I try to hang out with, you know, like-minded, gentle, easygoing people, because that's who I am as a person. But the people who started to show up at this party were quite a bit different. They seemed a little more rough around the edges. Some of them were kind of intimidating as they began laying weapons on the table, knives, brass knuckles, even a gun. There was illegal drugs being distributed throughout this party. And, you know, I was enjoying drinks like everybody else, but I didn't partake in illegal drugs. So very quickly, I felt very, very out of my element. And I was sitting in a chair, not knowing what to do or who to converse with. I couldn't leave because I didn't have my car with me. I had a designated driver that night. And, you know, after a few moments, I wanted to get out of there. I was very, very uncomfortable. And so I stood to my feet and everyone kind of looked at me suspiciously. I don't know if they thought I was going to call the police or, you know, make a run for it. But as everyone's eyes were on me, I kind of felt like I needed an excuse to step outside. At the time, I was a smoker. I no longer am, but at the time I smoked and I heard a voice inside of my head say, tell them you're going outside to smoke, you know, and don't forget your lighter. So I thought that was odd, but, you know, almost like an actor who had been given a line in a play, I said, oh, I'm just going out to smoke. Let me grab my lighter. So I stepped onto the outside balcony, and as I lit my cigarette, I heard a gunshot coming from inside the apartment. And naturally, my heart rate spikes. I panic. I open the door and I say, what the heck happened? And everyone's laughing inside, which kind of surprised me. So clearly the drugs were taking effect. People don't usually laugh at a gunshot. But what had happened, one of the guys was messing around with a handgun and had accidentally fired it. And the bullet had went through the backrest of the chair that I had been sitting in just seconds prior to going outside to smoke. And had I still been inside, had I been smoking, or excuse me, had I been sitting in that chair, the bullet would have went right through my chest. So whoever that voice was inside my head, whether it was, you know, my dad who had passed away when I was a teenager, or whether it was one of my guardian angels, you know, that's up for debate. But whoever that voice was in my head that suggested I step out and have a cigarette, I believe that voice saved my life. Because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't be here today. Thankfully, I kicked the habit of smoking. But that, you know, that moment, that night, I think is proof that even without a working knowledge of, you know, how psychic abilities work, and even without, you know, being able to, you know, access it willingly, sometimes we have these moments, you know, whether it's at the right place at the right time, or perhaps the wind blows just right, and we receive a message from the beyond. And in some cases, they can save our lives. In other instances, they can guide us to, you know, a better life path that might be more beneficial for us. So, you know, all joking aside, I always tell people, pay attention to the voices in your head. You know, sometimes they occur there for a reason. And when we listen to our intuition, good things tend to happen. So when we don't listen to our intuition, we can make life more complex, or, you know, even to the more extreme, we can jeopardize our own life. But in any case, I'm very thankful that I listened to that voice in my head, and I'll never forget that night, obviously.
Did you ponder on it a lot straight afterwards? Was it something that kind of died out of your thoughts quite quickly and you just got on with your life?
You know, I think at the time I kind of just got on with my life. I found it strange. I found it odd. I was grateful, you know, that I had listened to the voice, but, you know, life went on and I just continued doing my thing. I think I think about it more nowadays than I did back then. Now that I understand more about how, you know, psychic abilities work and how, you know, divine timing and synchronicity can occur. But it was, gosh, I mean, it was unusual to say the least. So yeah, I always think back and who would have thought that smoking can save a life? But in that instance, it did.
A sentence in the book that really stood out for me is you say, the fact that we have all lived before is an absolute certainty. So why for you is it an absolute certainty?
Well, I think there's different genres, there's different subsections of metaphysics, and you can call metaphysics whatever you want, new age, paranormal, you know, the spiritual realms, whatever you choose to call this, there's subcategories. And one of the subcategories is reincarnation, you know, past lives. And I think it's a phenomena that comes with so much tangible, factual proof that it's absolutely undeniable. Even to skeptics, you know, there's some skeptics who may scoff or raise an eyebrow at the thought of past lives. But once they actually study the research and the data and the case studies, it's undeniable. Because what we have is a worldwide phenomenon that transcends culture, religion, geography. These cases of children who remember past lifetimes with such detail that they can recall names, dates, locations, and they recall memories that are so specific that they couldn't have possibly made up the information. They recall who they were, where they lived, who their family members were. They remember the name of their favorite stuffed animal. They remember which shelf the bread was kept on in their old house. And when these children, who are often 3 and 4 years old, when they have these past life memories, when they begin sharing these memories with the family, the families are usually perplexed. But when enough details begin to unravel, even the most skeptical family, they kind of have to shrug their shoulders and consider the possibility that, you know, maybe the child is remembering who they were before. Because these children mention things like, I miss my other family, I miss my other mom, or you're a nice dad, but my last dad was named, you know, Barry. You know, they say these off the wall things. And if anybody listening knows children, there's a big difference between them playing make-believe versus them recalling factual information. It's matter of fact when they speak of past lifetimes. It's, you know, I lived in a blue house. My dad left, but my mom was really nice. We had a water well in the backyard, and I had a stuffed bear, you know, named Daniel. And I'm just making this up off the top of my head, but you know, it's things like this. And then the family goes, you know, we never lived in a house that has a water well. You never have had a stuffed teddy bear. And when they start, you know, asking for more information, it's almost like one of two things happens. Either the child continues to share more and more detailed information, or the child simply loses interest and runs off to play. But there are case studies worldwide where, you know, people study these kids and they're just sharing things that can be fact checked, especially in cases where the child was somebody prominent or somebody famous or somebody who witnessed a worldwide event such as the sinking of the Titanic. You know, there's kids around the world who are fascinated with the Titanic, and from the age of 3 and 4, never having watched a documentary on it, never having read a book, never have had people educate them on what happened with the sinking of the Titanic, they can share specifics, not just that the boat sank, but how many life rafts there were, you know, how many life preservers, how many people were on board, specs and details of the engine, how long the boat was, things like this, things that a child couldn't learn, you know, unless you're writing a high school history paper. So when I look at these worldwide case studies conducted by scientists and researchers and academics, and I combine that with my own personal work that I do to uncover past life information for my clients, the evidence builds up and it builds up. And that's why I always tell people, you know, I'm not 100% certain about many things in this world. You know, we're usually searching for answers and scratching our head and putting together theories. But past lives and reincarnation is one subcategory that I am 100% absolutely convinced is a real phenomena.
You use an example of a boy called Hunter who was a golfer.
Yeah, so if my memory serves right, when Hunter was young, I think he may have been 5 or 6 at the time, but you know, he saw him and his dad were, they liked to watch golf together. The dad was an avid golfer. They liked watching the Golf Channel on TV, and Hunter saw an old black and white image of a famous golfer from long ago. I think the golfer was actually from the 30s or 40s or 50s. My memory can't recall right now, but he said, "Hey, that's so-and-so. I think the golfer's name was Bobby Jones." And the dad said, "Well, yeah, that is, but how would you know? You know, you're not old enough to remember him." And then the boy starts rattling off facts about that golfer. The dad was skeptical and thought it'd be fun to come up with almost like a blind test to see if, you know, to see if his boy was recalling past life memories. So they actually came up with, he came up with a list of, I think it was 6 different pictures of homes from that era of the famous golfer. And he wanted the boy to identify which one was the golfer's home. And the boy did. The boy did with ease. So, you know, in that case, it took, you know, seeing an image of an old golfer from the 1930s. But in other cases, you know, all it takes is a child coming across, you know, an image or a show, a movie, a documentary, or even an artifact in a museum. It can be anything that triggers these past life memories. And then sometimes the floodgates just opening, you know, the floodgates just open. Now, in that case with Hunter, he feels he was that golfer in a past lifetime. And interestingly enough, there is a little bit of evidence that makes you scratch your head, because Hunter grew in to be a phenomenal golfer. He was basically, you know, the best in his class in the advanced golf academies that he was doing. He won nearly every golf tournament he ever entered. And even his instructors, upon watching his swing, would report to his dad. They would say, you know, I haven't seen a swing like that since the late, great Bobby Jones, you know, several decades ago. So I don't know. He made his father convinced. And there's just so many stories like this. But again, it's interesting because it transcends geography, culture, and religion. So this happens within families that are believers in past lives. It happens in families that don't believe in past lives. It happens in families like my own, who are spiritual and open-minded. And it also happens in families that are deeply religious. So I think that's interesting, because it cuts a cross-section all throughout the population of humanity. And, you know, I just find it hard to believe that all of these kids could be lying or making things up, especially when the information can be fact-checked.
So that's children's past life memories. What about when you're doing a past life session with someone? How do you access their past lives?
Yeah, so I know past life regression is a popular thing that a lot of people enjoy doing. My process is a bit different. I'm not certified in hypnotherapy. So when I meet with a client, whether it's on the phone or in person or on Zoom video, it's quite literally inside my mind. It's like stepping into a past life. It's like stepping beyond the veil, play on words. It's like stepping beyond the veil into the past life. And I can see it almost as though I'm a fly on the wall observing what happened. I see the past life images of my clients in full color and high definition. I can hear the sounds, I can smell the smells, and I can see what transpired. And oftentimes the information includes things such as, you know, where you lived, what time period it was in, what your job was, your talents, your hobbies, your interests and fears and family members. And what's really fun, what's really interesting, is to see the synchronicities, the similarities from past lives to a person's present life. Because more often than not, you know, as I'm describing, for example, a client who was an artist in their most recent past lifetime, more often than not, they will then share with me that they're currently an artist or have artistic abilities. If I'm describing a client's past life during during the Civil War, where she was a nurse, for example, she'll pause and smile at me and she'll divulge that she's currently working as a nurse. So, you know, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I feel like our careers, our hobbies, our interests, our personalities, is so much about who we are is rooted in past lives. And one thing that I always say, time and time again, is the brain can't remember, but the soul never forgets. And what I mean by that is a lot of us don't consciously remember who we were in our past lives, but a couple levels below the surface, I think a lot of us do know, we do remember. And this comes about by, you know, realizing that we're not so different from who we used to be. You know, yes, our personality changes a little bit from life to life. Yes, we get a new body each time and therefore can look quite a bit different. But some of our natural abilities and our innate predispositions, I think, are like a carried over artifact. It's a remnant. It's a thread that connects the present to the past. And, you know, it's quite remarkable because when you view our existence like this, it makes our reality seem more circular rather than linear. You know, it makes life seem like a revolving door versus more like a one and done kind of existence. So, yes, there's life after death. And I've demonstrated that process for many, many years with my mediumship, you know, connecting people with their loved ones who have passed away. But when you factor reincarnation into the equation, life after death is actually only the beginning. You know, we come back time and time and time again, as many times as we want, when and where we wish, because free will plays into it. We decide when we come back again and why we come back again. But for me, that thought is comforting. And I know for anybody listening, if you're a female, it's probably hard to imagine yourself having a beard in a past life where you were a man. And for me, as a guy, I find it odd to think I probably wore lipstick in a past life as a female. But it also gives me comfort, you know, to know that regardless of how amazing or challenging or complicated or maybe how short this life seems, you get to come back again and again until your heart is content. Each time having new experiences, each time, you know, viewing the world through a slightly different lens, you know, getting the chance to be the hero or the villain or the artist or the nurse or the, you know, or the caretaker in one life and then the patient in the next. And, you know, we play all these roles and pretty soon life itself kind of seems like a community theater. And, you know, each life is almost kind of like a different production or a different play where we're playing a slightly different character than the time before. So for me, past lives are the subgenre of spirituality that I'm most passionate about, that I'm most fascinated by. And my most recent book, Beyond the Veil, touches on it quite a bit, but so do my other books. I came out with one a few years back called Old Soul, Young Spirit. And that talks extensively about past lives and how they affect our current one. And prior to that, I wrote my memoir, which is called The Sky Diaries, A True Story of Reincarnation. And in that case, that's my family's life story about how we eventually throughout the years connected the dots to uncover evidence that we have all shared previous lifetimes together. And the book culminates in discovering that my daughter is the reincarnation of somebody that I lost that was very important to me years and years ago.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression therapy sessions over Zoom, and these sessions can be very insightful and healing. If you go to my website, pastlifeshypnosis.co.uk, you can book a free 20-minute consultation where we can discuss what it is you would like to achieve. You'll find the link to my website in the show notes. So when you tap into somebody's past life memories, you get very much involved in them, enveloped in them in a way. So do you ever come across traumatic events? And is there a kind of thing where you have to protect yourself?
Yeah, that's a good question, Simon. Enveloped is a good word. I do feel like I'm enveloped by a person's past lifetimes when I'm doing that process. It's like stepping into a movie or a fantasy book. I feel like I'm actually there. Yes, sometimes I do witness trauma or tragedy, because as we know, life is not always easy. It comes with loss and challenges and difficulties and disappointments. And sometimes those are uncovered in past life events. But the beauty of past lifetimes is you can almost view it from an objective point of view. I've never had a client have an emotional breakdown while hearing that they were, you know, injured or stabbed or drowned in a past lifetime. They often relate to it, and they often say, that explains, you know, my fear of water or why I won't ever get in the ocean or river, because, you know, if you drown in a past life, certainly that trauma can carry over into this life. But I've never had a client, have an emotional breakdown. You can almost compartmentalize and say, okay, that's sad. That's unfortunate. That would, you know, be, that would be terrible to be in that situation, but presently they're safe. Presently they're good. So yeah, but you know, the past lives do explain quite a bit, not just about our career and our talents and our phobias, but, you know, but also our relationships. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times past life events help explain current relationship dynamics. You know, gosh, I could list off numerous examples. You know, in one case, I was telling a lady, and she was a Caucasian lady, and I told her that she's been Black in a lot of her past lifetimes, and you know, that's just what she's known. That's what she's comfortable with. And she started laughing. And of course, I had to ask what, you know, what the joke was. And she said, well, I'm actually married to a Black man. She said she's only attracted to Black men. And you know, we kind of stopped laughing. And I said, you know, it actually makes a lot of sense, because that's what you're used to. That's, you know, based on your past lifetimes, that would have been customary and typical. In other cases, I remember giving a psychic past life session to a lady who was in love with a man who was imprisoned. And come to find out after the reading, she actually told me that her whole life, for reasons she couldn't really fathom, she had always been attracted to unavailable men. And in fact, in this lifetime, one of her boyfriends was imprisoned and she stayed with him for the duration of his incarceration. But it's interesting to see the patterns, not just negative ones, but positive ones as well. You know, stories of, you know, husband and wife finding each other again after having been lovers in numerous past lifetimes. Not long ago, I gave a session to a husband and wife and detailed a past lifetime that they lived in Ireland. And, you know, the wife had a bakery and it was a very happy lifetime. And, you know, come to find out, you know, once again, they found each other, fell in love, took their vacation in Ireland, which is their honeymoon, rather. They took their honeymoon in Ireland, which is a neat synchronicity. And then on top of that, the woman loves to bake, and she had considered opening up a bakery in this lifetime as well. So yeah, relationships are interesting. Past lives play into it quite a bit. So it's kind of funny to imagine, you know, your children, your spouse, your friends, your coworkers, how there's overlap, you know, circles within circles. There's a lot of overlap from the past that affects us in the present. And sometimes when you can uncover that past life information, it helps explain an awful lot about current dynamics.
Well, I've got a couple more questions for you. These ones, I think, are a bit more way out to do with reincarnation. Do you think it's possible for somebody to be incarnated in two different people at the same time?
I think anything's possible. Way back when I started this journey, I may have said no, but I, you know, like any profession or interest, the longer you do it, the more you learn. The more you learn, the more open-minded you become. And I've concluded that, you know, this world, our existence, this reality is far more strange than we can possibly comprehend. Yes, I do think it might be possible for a soul to be in two different people simultaneously. And not only do I believe that, but there's some of the most intelligent, world-renowned experts in physics and in science agree with me. So when you get down to the quantum level of physics, things get really strange, really spooky, as Einstein once called it, spooky action at a distance. But what they've uncovered, what these, you know, quantum geniuses have uncovered, is that, you know, if they study a small bit of matter, I think it's a proton, if I do recall. But if you study a small bit of matter, they've conducted studies that prove that it's possible for little bits of matter to exist in two different places simultaneously. Almost think of it this way. If you cut an orange in half, okay, you cut an orange or an apple in half, and you flew them to separate parts of the world, and you wiggled one half of the orange, and on the other part of the world, the other half of the orange would wiggle at the same exact way and the same exact time. That's what we're talking about. You know, one object split in two that seemingly still has consciousness as though it's still connected, with no lag, no delay. And it's interesting. So you scale that up and you start to wonder, by the way, that's called quantum superposition. You know, two things existing simultaneously in two different locations, quantum superposition. Some people call it bilocation. But if you scale this notion up to a soul level, you know, it's theorized that, yes, it might be possible for a soul to exist in two different bodies at the same time. Now, if that's true, it's really mind-blowing to think, because maybe half of your soul is in Simon, who's between lifetimes, you know, right now having a cup of tea and relaxing on a beach, or half of the soul's in this Simon here talking with me on this wonderful podcast. I think it's too much for our earthly brains to comprehend, but the science checks out. And I have faith that since, you know, with these AI quantum supercomputers and science, you know, now progressing at an unimaginable rate, I just think it's only a matter of time before they can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that a soul can exist in two places at once. And kind of on this correlates to one of the most frequently asked questions that I've ever been given by clients and people at my lectures. You know, in years past, for the majority of my career, I did mediumship. I no longer do. I retired from that aspect of my work. But the mediumship is where I would relay messages from the deceased loved ones of my clients. And in doing so, you know, it proves that there's life after death, and it offers a lot of comfort and closure to people who are grieving the death of somebody they care about. And people would always ask me, how is it possible for a medium to, you know, to communicate with somebody in the afterlife if that person's already back, you know, somewhere else on the planet living another lifetime? There's two answers to that question. First, it's customary for a person to take several decades to rest between lifetimes. Okay, so if I'm, you know, relaying messages from Uncle Gary, who passed a couple decades ago, chances are he's still in the afterlife, catching his breath and relaxing. If Uncle Gary or whoever is back living another lifetime, it's still possible to communicate with him for the reasons we just talked about. You know, part of his soul would be in the afterlife, while part of his soul would be here living his next human incarnation.
Have you ever come across lives on other planets when you've been doing this with your clients?
Unfortunately, not yet. Not yet. I relish the chance to do that. People often ask me that question as well. However, I have met several individuals, normal, everyday people, who feel in their heart of hearts that they've had past lives on other planets. And again, who am I to say that's not possible? And I think it's entirely possible. I think any living entity, whether it's a human or a, you know, your pet dog or a plant, even a plant can have consciousness. So I think, you know, all living things have energy. You can call it a soul. You can call it an energy source. Because that's true, you know, alien life forms would also have a soul. And so, yeah, who's to say? I do think it's possible that a person could incarnate on a different planet, or an alien species could incarnate as human. And just because I haven't come across it yet, that doesn't mean it can't exist. You know, the universe is 13.7 billion years old. Earth is only 4.3 billion years old, roughly. And so, you know, you have to think there have to be advanced life forms somewhere out there in the cosmos that are millions or billions of years more advanced than humans. That being the case, they've probably had a lot more lifetimes than we have in the past. And off topic, yes, I do believe some of those civilizations have been visiting Earth for a very, very long time, and quite possibly are walking among us as well. But that's a topic for another show, I suppose.
So in the book, you say that you were studied by a neuroscientist, Dr. Jeffrey Fannin.
Yeah, I was. Dr. Jeffrey Fannin, at the time, I'm not in touch with him anymore, but at the time he was based in Phoenix, Arizona, here in the United States, and he was visiting my hometown of Omaha for one of his offices or associates. And this was very early on in my psychic career. I think I had only been giving official psychic readings for a year or less, but through a mutual acquaintance, I was invited into his laboratory, and he was a very open-minded person, which is refreshing to, you know, to know that some of the scientists out there do believe in this kind of thing. And being as open-minded as he was curious to see what my brain looked like as I was giving people psychic information or past life information. So they hooked me up to they basically put a cap on top of my head that was hooked up to all these sensors and wires that connected to a computer. And they were studying my brainwaves as I was, you know, in that intuitive mindset. So I gave a psychic reading to his assistant. They took pictures of my brain. A couple weeks later, they crunched the data. He gave me a phone call. And of course, as any neuroscientist, he's a pretty smart guy. So he's using terms I'm not familiar with. And I stop him and I say, okay, Dr. Fannin, can you simplify it and explain it to me like a kindergartner? And he said, sure. And he said, basically, when a person is actively giving a psychic reading, he said, your brain was lit up like a Christmas tree. There is different parts of the brain that were working in unison that don't typically work together at the same time. And, you know, for instance, when the room was quiet, because they were recording audio at the time as well, in a moment where the room was quiet, he said, my brain was showing indications that I was hearing voices, like I was actively listening to somebody speaking to me, but the room was quiet. So he said, you know, if you're looking for proof that you are in fact hearing from invisible entities, you know, from the beyond, he said, this is it. Because, you know, it was no different than as if somebody was speaking to you in the room, your auditory center was engaged. And at the time, I remember I was speaking with the spirit guides, the guardian angels of his assistant. So yeah, he said it's really interesting, you know, to study the brain to see what it does, and the fact that, you know, psychic abilities consume so much headspace and brain power that it can be quite fatiguing. And I said, well, you know, that makes sense because, gosh, thinking back to when I was employed as a social worker, you know, an 8-hour workday wasn't nearly as tiring as, you know, 3 hours of giving psychic readings. And he says, well, yeah, that actually makes sense because he says you're using more than 3 times the brain power to do what you do intuitively. So that was interesting to have a little bit of, you know, scientific support that, you know, that people in my profession, that what we do is legit, can be studied, can be verified and validated. So for me, that was kind of a fun process, although I will say that during the process, it was kind of uncomfortable at times because as they put the skull cap on my head, there's like this goop underneath of it. And it was, you know, running into my eye as I was trying to concentrate. So the conditions weren't necessarily ideal, but it made for a fun story after the fact.
And there's a thing in the book you say, are some historical inventors psychic on some level? And I was interested that some inventions seem to have sprung up at the same time in different parts of the world with people that haven't talked to each other.
Yeah, it is fascinating. And admittedly, this is not a common question I've been asked throughout the years, you know, but in talking with people and, you know, having metaphysical discussion groups, which I used to facilitate here in my hometown, it has come up before. You know, these cases of, you know, these historical inventions, you know, think of the airplane or the light bulb or, you know, Henry Ford inventing, you know, the first car or, you know, combustion engines or trains or what have you, you know, major historical inventions, major milestones accomplished by brilliant people. But, you know, what people often don't hear is the backstory, the lesser known stories of there was other people in other parts of the world who at the same time had the same brilliant idea to invent the same contraption. And then it becomes this you know, race to see who can do it first, who can get it patented first. But it does make you wonder if, you know, these inventors who are racing, you know, to be at the forefront of their industry, did they receive some sort of signal or message or download or activation, you know, psychically from the ethers? You know, it does make you wonder, are they tuned into some sort of frequency And is there some sort of psychic connection? You know, I think back to, you know, gosh, some of the more eccentric figures throughout history. You have Nikola Tesla, you know, and his Tesla coil. I mean, he was cutting edge in terms of electricity and trying to find a way to get free electricity all throughout the world. And, you know, his life is steeped in tragedy and misfortune and mystery, you know, but there were other people at the same time, you know, coming up with similar inventions. And again, it just makes you wonder, because in that instance, Nikola Tesla was a very spiritual person. He was, you know, he was very much dabbling in the occult and the esoteric. And so were some of the other brilliant minds throughout history. And it just makes you wonder if they're sensing something psychically that the general population is not. And all we can do is speculate. But I do think there's a connection between, you know, creativity and intelligence and intuition. I think, you know, generally speaking, intuitive people are very smart. Smart people are very intuitive. And I don't think you can reach that level of human ingenuity without, you know, being a little bit psychic, thinking outside the box, you know, being creative enough to visualize something that's never been created before. It's very interesting. It was a fun one to research and talk about in my book. And of course, you read that section, so you heard of my silly little inventions that have popped in my head throughout the years. Nothing groundbreaking, mind you, just little ideas. But I always say I must have been an inventor in a past lifetime, because I do have a lot of fun ideas that pop in my head. Oftentimes, I don't have the means by which to mass produce it or get it patented, but it's fun to daydream. I'll say that much.
So you've been on paranormal investigations and you've had all these experiences. Does stuff ever scare you? Because you talk in the book about you heard a full-blown spirit conversation in the hallway outside your bedroom. And that would freak me out, but how do you feel?
Well, yeah, admittedly, I think earlier on in this journey, I started a little more easy than I do now. But I suppose, like anything else, the more you do it, the less fearful you are of it. You know, I suppose the same could be said about a construction worker who works, you know, high up in the sky on skyscrapers. Yeah, probably the first year on the job, he was a little nervous, but after a while, it becomes second nature and it just becomes part of the gig. I'm not very scared by spirits anymore. It's just something I come to live with. Thankfully, I've never had a traumatizing or terrifying paranormal experience. But yeah, I do often hear, you know, spirit conversations. In fact, this home office that I'm sitting at right now, this very desk, I remember years ago, I was sitting here typing and working on one of my books at the time, and I felt something weird on the back of my neck. And I kind of reached back there, you know, to scratch the itch. And I feel a lump. And naturally, you know, I kind of panic thinking, oh, there's a bug or there's a spider in my shirt just below the collar. So I kind of pinch it so it can't wiggle any further down my shirt. And I stand to my feet and I manage to get it out of my shirt. And I'm holding it in my hand. And it's not a bug. It's not a spider. It's a little crystal. It's a little crystal about the size of a penny. And then I think for a sec, I recognize this crystal. It's a crystal that has rested on the bookshelf behind my chair for years. And I look there and it's gone. And I'm holding it in my hand. So, you know, I couldn't help but chuckle. I actually found it kind of humorous because it defied all logical explanation. I was home alone. I was completely alone. And it just makes me wonder, had there been a camera recording in my home office, would we have seen a spirit, you know, transport that rock? Would the rock have floated through the air and been dropped down the back of my shirt? And why? But it wasn't scary. It wasn't traumatic. I was just thankful it wasn't a spider. But you know, little things like that, objects that get moved on their own, things that go missing, disembodied voices. You know, things of this nature become commonplace after a while. And in some cases, it hasn't happened in quite a while, but there have been instances where I have seen a ghost float right past the foot of my bed and disappear into the wall. In that case, they appeared not to even notice me. but it was the form of a human being, kind of wispy white, average height, average build. And yeah, sure enough, whoever it was in a hurry and they just walked into the wall and disappeared. So, you know, again, I think it's interesting. It proves there's multiple layers to our reality. And if you're in the right place at the right time, it is possible to hear and or see, you know, spirits who exist on a different plane.
Well, thanks for coming on the podcast. The book's called Beyond the Veil, Exploring Reincarnation, Angels, and the Supernatural. That's on Amazon, isn't it?
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon, and you can get all of my books on Amazon. If you're looking to kind of take inventory and see which book might pique your interest, I have 8 of them currently available on subjects such as past lives and spirit guides and messages from beyond. You can find them all on my website, which is andymyersonline.com. So yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Simon. I'm a big fan. I love your podcast and all of them. And I'm so happy to have done this with you.
Great. You have a podcast.
Yeah, I do. I do. It's I'm less active on it than I used to be, but anybody who wants to find it, my podcast is called So Strange. And I also do another one with a couple friends of mine that's called Paranormal Dads. And so, yeah, it's funny, it's lighthearted, but it includes a lot of stories similar to the ones we shared today. So people can find that on, you know, Spotify and Apple Podcast and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks, Simon. Appreciate it.
This week, I was talking to Andy Myers about his book, Beyond the Veil, Exploring Reincarnation, Angels, and the Supernatural. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon. When you subscribe for $6 a month, you get exclusive access to an extended episode every week. For $3 a month, you get access to an extended episode every month. And you can now sign up for a 7-day free trial. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And look out for the Our Paranormal Afterlife episodes called Paranormal Stories, and they're released every week. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.